propagating truth in a world of lies. You are listening to the John Age Project.
Welcome to the Anomic Age. I'm your host, John Age. We have a very exciting program today. We have a guest that I've been waiting to talk to for a long time. He's been on the docket, and I've been looking forward to speaking with this gentleman for well over a month now. I'm excited about it. Elias Alias will join us today. So hold on to your hats for that. It's going to be a lot of information. Before we get into that, let's get into some news. But before we get into any of that, please check out the website, AnomicAge.com. Where you can download the episodes, the videos, you can email me, you can sign up for the newsletter, you can get the Android or the iPhone platform, you can just download the direct link to iTunes, and so much more. It's a plethora of things you can do from AnomicAge.com. So make sure and visit that today. And if you feel so inclined, drop me a couple bucks here or there. That would be nice. So without further ado, without further waiting or hesitation, let's get into the news. As usual, it's just a smattering of crazy out there. So let's kick things off with this one. Shock poll. Let me see. Let me get ahead of myself. The Gateway Pundit is where this is coming from. And it's from our old friend Jim Hoft. Shocking poll. Half of Swedish women afraid to go outside alone in some areas. We're talking about Sweden here, folks. This is no longer in the headline, but I'm emphasizing we're talking about Sweden. Sweden? Yeah. I mean, to be honest, the main thing I knew about Sweden as an adolescent was the Swedish bikini team and all kinds of just, you know, silliness from movies you'd see from Sweden. I never envisioned Sweden as being a high crime area. But now, it seems that the Swedish men, right, they've suddenly, after years of tranquility and happiness, the Swedish men only have just decided to take matters into their own hands and become violent, right? Is that what's going on here? Let me see. Fresh statistics in from Sweden show that 47% of women in the country are afraid of walking outside alone in the evening. This according to, crazy name I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce. I'm sorry, Swedish folks. I'm not even going to attempt that one. A branch of the government dealing with people's health. Almost half of the women aged 16 to 84 say that they are often or sometimes avoiding going out alone for fear of being assaulted, sexually assaulted, raped, or robbed. This is a 6% increase in just 5 years. So let's ponder for just a moment and think to ourselves, what's been going on in Sweden in the last few years? Have the traditional Swedish menfolk suddenly just become hostile, enraged, and just, you know, fighting off fits of rage, rape, and violence? And is that what's going on in Sweden? Or could it be a certain immigrant population from certain areas of the world that seem to be spreading a specific doctrine of peace and love? Is that might be it? No, there's no chance it has anything to do with the migrants. Don't say illegal, just say migrants, right? That's the new communist code words, migrants. Well, it's not new, but I mean, nonetheless, no connections whatsoever to the Muslim influx into this part of the world. From several news articles back, I think at least two episodes back, we discussed another article that was outlining this increase in bombings in Sweden. And I went on to say, of course, that's the Swedish men just getting crazy and bombing, right? It's not migrants. It's nothing but the Swedish people themselves. Yeah, I mean, if you read the propaganda articles, that's what it'll tell you. It will never say that these folks are migrants or Muslims. No. That would lead you to believe that they're just the usual folks in Sweden getting angry. Let's move on. I can hardly contain myself. DailyMail.com. This is coming from from Martin Beckford. Daily Mail. Mother, 38, is arrested in front of her children and locked in a cell hours after calling a transgendered woman a man on Twitter. Okay, so you have to distill this down. So right away, they've said a key buzzword amongst the communists. So right away, you can pick up on this is a protected class. Anytime you see the transgender, trans species, transhuman, trans, whatever, if you just throw that moniker on there, I think you could just throw the prefix trans. You could say trans hands if you wanted to, and automatically you would know, okay, protected class, total carte blanche, I can do whatever I want, nothing matters. Along with the Muslim moniker, that's another complete get-out-of-jail-free card. You can do whatever you want. So, okay, right away, the trans card has been played. That moniker has been instilled in our minds. So right away, just from reading the headlines, we know that this mother is a bad person. Okay? Because what she did is she called a transgendered woman a man on Twitter. This is the hilarity of it. This is beyond the idiocy that happened here in the States. Must have been 3 weeks ago now, where it was like this huge man, looked like He-Man, had a He-Man haircut. He was like 6'6". You know, he could take some folks out. But he was transgendered. So he was all upset in a GameStop, I believe, because somebody said, sir, and he went on this big ma'am diatribe. It's ma'am. It's ma'am. Yeah, and he proceeded to show himself and kick stuff over and threaten customers and assaulting people and all this jibber jabber. But he was in the protected class. So right away, the mainstream media went on a big parade and said, oh my goodness, the victim. He's a victim. He's a victim. Of what, we're not sure, but we know he's trans, so there's a victim mentality already in place. Nonetheless, let's get back to this this lady here. Lady 38 put in jail. For a Twitter post, excuse me, police officers detained Kate, I won't even give her last name, 38, at her home in Hitchin, Hertfordshire, England, across the pond. Pinky's out. More than 2 months after her arrest, she has had neither her mobile phone or laptop returned. 2 months ago? Oh boy. The complaints made by activist Stephanie Hayden led to her arrest. Oh my. Just gets better and better. And it goes on. It's got photographs of the people and we don't even really need to read anymore. I mean, I've read more, but why should you? Because you already know that this person is a bad person. Can't believe why you would even condone such misuse of pronouns. Come on. Let's move on. This is coming from RaptorManReports.com and from our first guest on the program, Raptor Man. Shout out to you, sir. Thank you for this great article. President Trump's national emergency powers, laws, and FEMA regions. This is a really good article. I won't even get into all the things in this article, but it definitely sort of spins off and connects to things that we were already kind of set to talk about today with our guest, coincidentally enough. The FEMA regions. A lot of folks have sort of forgotten the FEMA regions. I don't even know if many folks know what the heck the FEMA regions are. I'm sort of speaking, you know, in this colloquial diatribe like I know everyone's in my own brain and understands what the heck I'm talking about. So let's back the truck up a little bit. Whew. So FEMA, 1979, Jimmy Carter. Remember him? Anyway, so Jimmy, with the Executive Order 12127, began what is now FEMA. And then it joined 22 other agencies to become Homeland Security in 2003. But FEMA still exists as its own entity as well. It just sort of keeps gobbling up other things and combining other elements. But FEMA was signed into executive order, signed in as an executive order in 1979 by Jimmy. So a lot of people think as FEMA is this big benevolent love organization from the feds, right? I'm paraphrasing Ronald Reagan here by saying, you know, anything the feds are involved in, they're bound to mess up. And the worst thing you could hear is, we're the government, we're here to help. Yeah, exactly. President Reagan, you're correct, sir. And FEMA is a shining example of that. I mean, people wrongfully, I think people that were not living in Louisiana during Katrina, perhaps, think of FEMA as this benevolent love organization that just shows up with the Red Cross and rolls out love carpets for everybody. Gives you water, gives you food, takes your firearms, kicks you out of your house, forces you into a stadium, that sort of stuff. That sort of loving embrace. Just embrace it. Embrace the FEMA love. So, so Raptor Man's article doesn't discuss FEMA love. That's something new. And I think it's trans, so it's protected. But FEMA love is definitely outlined in all kinds of documents that perhaps the average listener hasn't heard of. So definitely look into Rex 84. It discusses all sorts of FEMA love and the continuity of government, or COG. That's a pretty big one. Some other things you might want to look into was how FEMA was definitely discussed during the Iran-Contra hearings. I know a lot of people have sort of forgotten all that fun. But if you remember Jack Brooks, you can look up this on YouTube. Jack Brooks was talking, or at least trying to talk to Oliver North during the hearings and trying to discuss, aren't there some secret government operations that have to do with the continuity of government and sort of rounding people up? And he was immediately squelched. He didn't even get that far. I'm adding a little bit of information to this for levity's sake. I'm paraphrasing heavily Congressman Jack Brooks. But he basically just began to broach the subject with Oliver North. Like, isn't there this thing that you know about and we know about? And immediately he was squelched. And they basically said, oh, we got to shut it down. We can't talk about this here. We'll have to have a closed hearing. The plebs can't understand the continuity of government. They can't know about Rex 84. They can't know that under an emergency, be it an invasion, a domestic squabble, or even something natural, under the guise of anything, the government can swoop in with FEMA love and embrace you right out of your homes, take away your firearms, and put you in a special little containment area. All that's there. It's under FEMA love. So all that and more is really what they didn't get into during the hearings because they were afraid of letting the proverbial cat out of the bag. I'll roll through some of these. You got Executive Order 10990, which gives the feds the ability to take over seaports. And that was renewed under the John Warner Defense Authorization Act. That's another big one of Rex 84, the Defense Authorization Act, the John Warner specifically, Defense Authorization Act. That really piggybacks into Rex 84 pretty heavily and discusses pretty much everything as far as the FEMA love that I was talking about before. Rounding you up, taking you out of your private property and putting you into a communal property. You can't have weapons under a communal property, right? The government's got to make sure there's no dissidents there. Let's move on to some other executive orders. 10995, they can take over communications and all media. Executive order, that is. Executive Order 10997, they can take over the power, the gas, the petroleum fuels, and minerals. Executive Order 10998, they can take over transportation, personal cars, seaports, and highways. Don't worry, there's nothing to fear here. Executive Order 10999, they can take over food, farms, and all consumable resources. By consumable, I mean like the food and water is really what we're getting at here. Executive Order 11000, they can mobilize work brigades. Fear not. Freedom through work, right? Isn't that what was on Auschwitz? Freedom through work. They can mobilize work brigades. Executive Order 1101, they can take over health, welfare, and education. I'm going to stop there. I mean, we could keep on rolling here with all of the different things that these executive orders can do. Under the guise of what? Safety. Love. Remember FEMA love? FEMA love. Yeah. They can do all this under the guise of safety. So back to the article. I'm sorry, Raptor Man. I'm working my way back. The plane is making that big circle. We're coming back. So what Raptor Man goes on to discuss here is basically the elements of the FEMA regions. You got 10 FEMA regions. So the U.S. will no longer be the U.S. under the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, nor Rex 84. The states are no longer there as sovereign areas. No. Come on, silly. Not here in America. It will be divided into 10 FEMA regions. Sound a little like Hunger Games yet? It'll be divided into 10 FEMA regions, where you'll have specific governors over those regions. Does sound a little like it now, doesn't it? And basically, like I said before, all autonomy, all constitutional Bill of Rights, all that's out the window during this sort of emergency, because we have to maintain the continuity of government, right? Get in your work brigade. We'll take care of your food, your water, your family. Sure, they might be subjugated and pushed into another camp. Hey, it's no big deal, huh? We'll FEMA love, remember? We're here to help. Give us your guns. Get in the truck. That's what's going on. That's what's up with FEMA love. So Raptor Man covers all this and more in his article from February 11th, 2019. RaptorManReports.com for all of these articles and more. I check this one out. If you don't know anything about FEMA, this will be a nice primer or primer. Pinkies out. That'll drop some knowledge on you. Let's move on. This article is coming from studyfinds.org from Ben Rainier. Oh boy, this is a short article, but it needs to be concise because, you know, most people can't even take more than a few minutes of conversation. Half of parents worry flu shots make children sick. What are these people, racist? Third, believe it doesn't work at all. All right, these are clearly some tinfoil hat wearing fruitcakes that need to get their kids taken away and need to get sent off to a FEMA camp. I mean, that's what's going on here. I'm not even going to read this dribble. We all know it's poppycock. Everybody knows you don't get sick from the vaccines. Airheads. Everybody knows it's not a live virus. They use the word attenuated. It's means weakened, but sure, it's not alive. Just take your vitamins. By vitamins, I mean vaccines. We don't need vitamins. The government will regulate those. Take your vaccines, kids. If not, might have to take you to the camp. Yeah, so that's what this article's saying. And it just goes on. It's a rather short piece. But, I can't believe any parents would think that's a big sham. No. I mean, sure, the flu vaccine is the only one that actually still has thimerosal in it. That shouldn't upset you at all. If you get the nasal version, it's the one that still has the live virus in it. I mean, sure, that shouldn't concern you at all. And remember from that Natural News article from, I believe, a week ago, it ups your chance, I believe, 600% of spreading and transmitting the flu. I mean, sure, anyone with a brain knows that when you get a virus, your body's going to shed said virus in mucus, in coughing, and sneezing, and all the other parts as well. It's going to shed it. So if your household happens to not have the flu, one of the best ways to get the flu is to have a family member go get the flu shot. I mean, then you can really up your chances of getting Alzheimer's. If it's a kid, you can, especially a male, boy, you could really up the chances of giving him some really cool, neurological disorders. But, I mean, at the very least, you can help everybody else in the family to get sick. I mean, that's a win-win as far as I'm concerned. Go get them. Drink some tap water, eat some GMO, have a good day. Let's move on. This is coming from pjmedia.com. Oh boy, Tyler O'Neill looks like he's a racist. We'll read it anyway. Sick. I'm kidding, Tyler. Don't think this is serious. Nonetheless, Minnesota is still prosecuting ex-Muslim Christian pastor for sharing his testimony in a mall. Right away, I mean, this guy is a bigot. You don't talk about God, not Jesus. Bigot. Here we go. Ramin Parsa, an ex-Muslim Christian pastor who was stabbed in Iran, imprisoned in Turkey, and then arrested in the Mall of America. Must be like the Patriot Act. Must be like the inverse of what it really is. The Mall of America, for sharing his testimony with interested Muslim woman, faces a settlement conference in March and likely a trial in April. He's going down. The state of Minnesota has continued to prosecute his case, even though the Mall of America was wrong to accuse him of trespassing in the first place. How do you trespass in a mall? I mean, unless the mall's closed. That's like trespassing in the park at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, isn't it? Nonetheless, the Mall of America, this is in Minnesota. This is in now communist-controlled Minnesota. This is a communist region in the former Republic of the United States of America, Minnesota, which is now completely controlled by the communists, or if you'd like to spin it in a different light, the Muslims. That's who's control of Minnesota now. So, of course, the Mall of America, they may as well just make it the Mosque of America and appease these folks, because that's kind of where we're at now. So this gentleman, Ramin Parsa, is now facing more, is still facing charges, because he dared to speak what? The word of Buddha? No. The word of Selassie? No. What was he talking about? Oh, the only religion that's completely banned. I mean, we went, in the beginning of the program, we sort of discussed protected classes. This is the inverse. This is the most unprotected class you can possibly be. He was discussing the Lord Jesus Christ in a mall to a Muslim woman. I mean, right away. I mean, this guy knows better than that, right? He can't talk to women. He can't talk to Muslim women. He can't talk about God. Get out of here. Put this guy under the jail. I'm sorry, Parsa. Your time's up. You're in the Muslim commie-controlled region of Minnesota. You don't get this freedom, do you? Yeah, so this is America. I mean, I'm trying to put a little levity on what is otherwise a disgusting disgusting news roundup. I mean, what? This is America, once again. I mean, we went really heavy into abortion the last two shows, and I was trying to wean myself away from that, pun intended. But, I mean, now it doesn't get any better. When you talk about other topics, it's the same thing. It's the same inaction of the American people. It's the same trampling of all rights. Constitutional, Bill of Rights, just civil rights, what have you. I mean, they're all gone. No big deal, right? Let's move on. How will LGBT, L-M-N-O-P, I added that, history be taught in New Jersey schools after new law? This is coming from NorthJersey.com from Hanan Adeli. All right, so let's put on our glasses. What do we really see here? LGBT. So right away we know we're dealing with a protected class. So you can't say anything bad. You can't even think it, or it's a thought crime, you bigot. Okay? We clear on that? No thinking anything but love. Embrace it. Like the theme of love. So right away we got a protected class going on. So we got New Jersey schools. Will. Hey, you're in the state indoctrination system. You will. You'll be holding to those federal funds, you prostitute. When the federal pimp does his hand like this, he says, hey, you're going to teach this. I'm going to slap you around. get with a program or who cuts your funds, right? New Jersey schools will teach LGBT history under a new state law, but what does that mean for the classroom? That may depend on where you live. Oh boy, here we go. These people and their freedoms. The law requires, underscore this, soak it in, feel it, feel the love. Requires that middle and high school students learn about the social, political, and economic contributions of LGBT individuals, but leaves it up to local districts to determine how to teach these lessons. All right, so right away, you can't have this. You can't have states' rights at all. You can't have local rights. I mean, that's racist. What you really need is some... trying to clean it up. I was about to just jerk the wheel into a dark chasm and perhaps run aground. Yeah, so what you really need is some transgendered folks to come in and teach the class for you. I mean, you gotta teach it through their lens, and what better teacher to teach through the lens than a trans person to come in, right? Anyway, I'm gonna move on. I can't just I'm gonna get dark in a minute. It's not gonna be cool. All right, let's move on here. FoxNews.com. Is Skynet a reality? Well, the term did come from government documents in the 70s. Whatever. As Trump signs executive order on artificial intelligence, tech giants warn of danger. Whew. Chris Cassia, Fox News. So yeah, the term in and of itself, Skynet, that was obviously portrayed in the Terminator movies, was definitely from some government documents. So, I mean, did it come from them? I mean, have they had artificial intelligence for a long time? Have they had a remote control plane since World War I? I don't know. Are drones really old hat that's now being rolled out as a mass consumable just to make people subtly aware of the surveillance? I don't know. Yeah, tech giants warn of danger. Who do you think is creating these things? I mean, sure, DARPA is behind it, but, like, their civilian arm that's heavily puppeteered is definitely the tech giants. I mean, I hope you didn't think these tech giants just sprang up naturally on their own. Let's move on. Well, let's call it a day right there. Otherwise, we'll just get crazier and crazier. Alrighty then. Let's talk to our old friend, Elias Alias. Born in 1945 in Arkansas, grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. Graduated Treadwell High School in 1963, where Elias was Memphis City Schools cross-country champion. Quit college in 1965 to join the Marines. Volunteered for Vietnam and got it. After his time at war, Elias became a dental gold crown and bridge technician. We could have a whole episode on that alone. That sounds very interesting. Then morphed into jewelry design and cast making gold jewelry with diamonds and colored gemstones. That's interesting in and of itself. I'll shut up and keep talking. In the 80s, Elias took a sabbatical from jewelry work and drove big trucks for 5 years in 48 states. Irregular route, learning about America's industry and geography. Throughout the 1990s, Elias owned and operated a retail jewelry store in Georgia until the year 2000. Elias's red pill epiphany came by getting online in 1999 and reading about America's hidden history, government corruption, and the encroaching one world government, all of which caused him to close his store and move to Montana. Also, in 1999, he created a YouTube club named the Mental Militia. I love that name. Which has been online since then in various venues. He's currently building the national website to add to his forums. The idea of the Mental Militia is to study the psychology of mass programming and its effects on individual consciousness while helping readers learn about the false left versus right paradigm. A Jeffersonian classic liberal by nature, Elias kept a foot in both sides of the political aisle until seeing why he should rise above all political folly. Quite a bit to discuss with Mr. Elias Alias. Please be availed of his website, thementalmilitia.net, as well as silverseedsofliberty.com. All that and more will be available on AnomicAge.com under his guest information and show information as well. So let's take a brief pause, and we will meet up with Elias on the other side. Thank you for joining me today, and I will see you in a bit. We are pleased to welcome to the program today Elias Alias. Elias was a senior editor for the Oath Keepers national website for 7 years until November 2016. Having retired from Oath Keepers, Elias is now going back into jewelry design work and will occasionally add a page or two to his website, thementalmilitia.net. Elias also works as an associate producer for James Yeager's constitutional documentaries, which feature G. Edward Griffin, Ron Paul, Edward Vieira, and many others. Elias has 2 grown children, a grandchild, also a willing servant to all cats, and calls himself the original unemployed poet. Welcome, Elias, to the program. I'm happy to have you on, sir.
Hi, John. I'm glad to be with you, man. We can have a nice visit here.
I know. I'm excited.
Very good. Where do you want to start off?
Oh, man. I feel like there's so much to cover. I guess just introduce yourself to the audience and tell us as little or as much as you'd like to about yourself.
Okay. I'm an old coot. The government of the United States, completely out of its character, did keep its word to me back in 1966. One promise that it made and actually fulfilled was that when I joined the Marine Corps and volunteered for Vietnam, they would send me to Vietnam, and they did. So that was remarkable. Coming home from the Vietnam War, which I made it out unscathed, other than some Agent Orange dosage. I spent a couple of years trying to deprogram myself from the military kill, kill, kill consciousness, which I was happy to accept when I was going through boot camp at Parris Island, South Carolina. But that wasn't going to be my life's charter, so to speak. So I kind of got out of that mindset gradually. And the next thing I knew, I was involved in the, that's the underground counterculture, anti-war, peace, love, and dope society that was operating underground while protesting the Vietnam War. By the time I'd been home for a couple of years, I began to understand my government, which did not lie to me, except they lied about why they sent me to Vietnam. My government decided that it couldn't tolerate people who wanted to be pacifists, people who wanted to end the war. And so when we would go to a college campus or a public event and chant give peace a chance, the government would bring out platoons or battalions of cops with billy clubs and sometimes troops with guns and beat us over the head for simply chanting, give peace a chance. So that was another eye-opener for me. I realized, you know, once the corporate dynasty, which is kind of headquartered on Wall Street, which is carrying the water for the military-industrial complex, once all of that gets involved in lobbying our government and to the point that it can affect policy-making decisions in Congress or in the White House, we, the people, have apparently begun to lose our control over our quote-unquote self-governing institutions. That's not really what the founders had in mind, as far as I could tell. So I got myself arrested in 1971 for marijuana. And that was not a pleasant experience, but it does make a colorful story, which I won't bore you with today. But, however, as the years went by, I got over that and started a business. And the IRS kind of tricked me out of that business. They scared me to death, and I bankrupted the business, Chapter 7. And went off into living in trucks for 5 years to absorb the emotional damage of being shut down by another government agency. So after that, I went back into jewelry work again, and I worked for a few years. And by the 90s, I moved into Georgia and opened a retail store, which was doing really well. And I was happily and busily running that store throughout the 90s. And I made the big mistake, John. I let my girlfriend, partner, inform me that we had to have a computer for our inventory control at the store. And then I got the computer and got it online and started reading. And I went middle-aged crazy with the new knowledge I was gaining on the Internet.
It's easy to do.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, it happens to a lot of people when they first start finding out, my God, we have been lied to about everything.
Yeah.
So I freaked out. Like I like to say, it was middle-aged crazy. And announced to my partner that we're closing the store and I am moving to Montana. So that was the end of 1999. Just before I did that, I created an online discussion group as a Yahoo club, and I named it the Mental Militia. Three words, the Mental Militia. So that was 20 years ago this year. And the Mental Militia has been online in one format or another ever since. 4 years ago, I started building a national website for my ideas about the Mental Militia. And it's really not grown much or gone anywhere, but it's kind of like a place where I can put my reflections and my thoughts and give other people who are doing things to help our nation, give them a landing page at my website where I can refer people, readers, to their web operations or their organizations or their companies. Talking, you know, people like the 10th Amendment Center, people like Michael Shaw over at Freedom Advocates, who's educating people about Agenda 21, and so on and so on. There's a lot of people there on my Allied Camps page. But in recent years, being busy with that, I've let the jewelry game slide somewhat, and this past year, I have rebuilt a jewelry casting shop and a wax design studio in my little cabin here in the woods in Montana. And I am coming up with a line of earrings for ladies that is my particular approach to getting even with the government for arresting me for smoking my dope. So I am casting from an old mold I made back in the 1970s. I am casting wax models of that mold now. And the mold is of marijuana seeds. So I am making sterling silver marijuana seeds and affixing those to earrings, which I buy from supply companies in the American jewelry industry. And I am hoping to establish a movement of sorts in which a lot of young Americans and us older ones too would also enjoy reminding the government that we as individuals own our bodies, and no government has any right or authority to regulate or control what we do or do not put into our bodies. In other words, as a editor for Oath Keepers for 7 years, I spoke with a lot of sheriffs, I spoke with a lot of law enforcement in general, and military. I also spoke with some constitutional experts who I won't name because I don't want to associate their names with my marijuana madness. But I learned a lot about the Constitution, and I found out so many years after I had been arrested for pot, I found out, my goodness, the federal government has no authority to own my body. It has no enumerated power or grant of permission or authority of any kind to tell me what I will and will not eat or drink or smoke. It's my body. And that goes back to Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, the primary author of the Declaration of Independence, simply said that we are born with unalienable rights, and that those rights are given to us by the Creator, which he later named it in that same document. We are given these rights by nature or nature's God. And if you read about the life of Thomas Jefferson and you read the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers and letters by Jefferson to other people, you'll come to see that Jefferson was protecting our rights to own our lives as free citizens. And he was also noticing that no man-made government has any authority to claim ownership over a citizen's body in violation of those God-given rights that Jefferson was talking about. So that's what that helped me decide when I stepped down as editor for Oath Keepers. I realized, you know, I'm going to go back to jewelry design work, and I'm going to create a line of jewelry that allows people to reflect their recognition of their own self-ownership over their bodies and their minds, their lives, under all of the protections given in our Constitution. And I thought, you know, I've been talking to the conservative right, the Christian right, so to speak, for many years, and what they call the liberty movement. But I realized, like myself, you're now in my 70s, but living through the 60s and 70s, there are a lot of people in my generation who enjoy smoking their pot and who have never found out by studying the Constitution that the government has no authority to own their bodies. They haven't found that out. And so I'm going away from the conservative right into the left side of the aisle, most non-voting Americans inhabit. More people don't vote in America than do vote. So I'm going to be targeting this market of old hippies and new hippies and young, intelligent people who have discovered that the government is lying through its teeth about marijuana. We can go off into all the lies, but it's a long list and we don't have enough time in one show. But the list of lies is incredible, whether it's, you know, Watergate, or if it's the Bay of Pigs screw up, or if it's the Gary Francis Powers shoot down over Russia, so many things. The Gulf of Tonkin that got us into Vietnam, everything, they have lied to us big time. So realizing that by drifting away from the voting experience and just trying to stay out of jail or stay out of the way of the booted thugs who represent the government,
yeah,
and stay out of jail, live their lives, work their jobs, raise their families in peace, all of those people would be very, very important to a shift in public policy regarding government intrusion into our unalienable rights. So that's kind of my little self-imposed mission. I have built a website with a brand new little store. It's called SilverSeedsOfLiberty.com, and it's ready to go now, but I have not really announced it to the public yet. You're probably my first step in announcing this story. But I do have, you're welcome, thank you, brother. I have 15 jewelry designs there, which are earrings for ladies and ear studs that would be for men or women. I will later, soon, be bringing out hat pins, finger rings, pendants to wear around the neck, and other designs as I continue to build this line of jewelry. But right now, if you got a girlfriend or a wife that needs a pair of earrings that shows her decision to own herself in spite of whatever the government says, then go to SilverSeedsOfLiberty.com and get her a pair of earrings, right? So now I'm hoping I don't alienate your audience by being so candid with you about my personal life.
No, I don't think it's possible. I'm all about openness and chips fall where they may, in my opinion. So.
Okay. Well, I am an honorably discharged U.S. Marine. I've had 3 small businesses in my life. I have grown kids, and I'm a peaceful, friendly, happy guy that likes to create beautiful jewelry. And I've made a good living through the years doing that until recent years when I was trying to be an editor, which kind of didn't pay so well. But I'm looking forward to minding my own business here in my little cabin in the woods and manufacturing this line of jewelry. So I'm not really a problem for anybody except the arrogant fools on Capitol Hill who some way or another think they have a right to own my body. My creator was here before a man-made government got here, and so I answer to my creator first and the government second. They don't have authority to violate my unalienable rights, and I'll just refer them to Thomas Jefferson, who proved it. So, but I understand a lot of people are really fearful that I might smoke a joint and run out here and rob a bank or something. I have managed not to rob any banks throughout my whole life, but I have been smoking my weed for just over half a century. It's 50 plus years. I don't know that it's really damaged my mind. I'm sure it has helped my body, because thanks to my benevolent federal government, I was dosed with Agent Orange in Vietnam. And the relief that I get from smoking my medical marijuana is a very beneficial thing to me, and it helps me escape any pain, especially neurological pain. So, all in all, I'm friendly, I'm harmless, and I'm very creative, and I really am an unemployed poet. I think I may have sent you to a page that had some of my poetry.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, you can see how crazy I am, juggling abstracts and creating new words that the king's language didn't authorize. But, you know, it's a fun hobby, and it's peaceful, and it exercises the intuition, my instincts, my mental planes, all of that. So, speaking of a mental militia, why would I name something that, a discussion group?
I know, I was going to say that. I love the title. I was mulling it over when I first heard your work and thinking about it before the show. And I was kind of, for whatever reason, it made me think of the Aldous Huxley. He gave like a 62 speech at UC Berkeley. And one of the things in there, he said, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but basically, our end game is to get the people to love and embrace their servitude and their slavery, basically. And I think, you know, we're spot on. That's where we are in 2019. I think most of the people have just embraced it, and they've gone through so much trauma-based mind control and so much psyops. I mean, for my money, our whole reality is a big psyop for the most part. So the mental militia might be the best way to go.
I'll drink to that, John. The way I like to put it is, let's go back to 1928 when Sigmund Freud's nephew named Edward Bernays.
That's him, yeah.
Yeah, he published a little book called Propaganda. And on page 71, he was noting that the group mind, or what Dr. Carl Jung would call the collective consciousness, responds differently to a stimulus than would an individual mind. And so in the same paragraph where he's talking about this, the difference between collective consciousness and individual consciousness, he notices that, the way he put it in paraphrasing, it became apparent to us that if we understand how to manipulate the group mind, can we control society's perceptions without their even knowing it? Okay, so he sold this idea to Madison Avenue and Wall Street and to the U.S. federal government across the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and played a very instrumental role in what we call public relations. Now, I'm glad to see that you're already familiar with his writing.
You were reading out of my playbook in my brain. I was going to talk about Bernays and the torches of freedom and all this other silly nonsense.
Very good, man. That's history. You can go to Amazon.com and buy the book and read it for yourself.
I always joke with people and I say, he literally wrote the book Propaganda. Not kidding. That was it. He wrote the book.
Right. But he also, later, you know, Goebbels, who was one of Hitler's right-hand men, kept copies of that book and disseminated it or distributed it to his key people in the Third Reich. And so after Goebbels and the whole Hitler fiasco kind of dirtied up this term propaganda, Bernays instituted a new program to quit calling it propaganda and let's call it public relations. All right, so, and you go to university campuses today, that's what they'll say about Bernays. Oh, yeah, he's the father of public relations. But it's still all the same thing, and it's still corporate-financed and developed techniques for hypnotizing the collective consciousness of the American people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to pull their own words, every major university or corporation has a public relations department. I think it would be a little bit bad if they had a propaganda department, so they just have to rebrand it, you know,
exactly,
to something more digestible.
And they'll tell you that branding is very important.
Oh, yeah.
These subtle deep state influences that permeate our society and its infrastructures, all of our little social institutions and our cultural institutions, they've all been permeated and intruded into by this deep state phenomenon, which is kind of like the apex of the ladder of success that all corporations are trying to ascend. They want to be international corporations, and they want to feed the economy of the different regions of the world all into one global economy, atop which sits, as you know, the family called Rothschild. They are the wealthiest family on the planet, and their institutions are another whole show. But we have been, well, let me put it this way. The very people that created the Federal Reserve System in 1910 and got it into law in 1913, those very people also financed the development of the NEA, the National Education Association, and supported this concept of, oh, my goodness, the federal government needs to get involved in educating our kids, of all the kids in all the states. The federal government would be able to show these silly states a better way to educate their children. So the NEA is pumping the Department of Education at the federal level, determining the content of textbooks, so that our children, for several generations now, have been slyly and quite coyly indoctrinated towards the globalist point of view, which is that we are going to become, when we grow up, we're going to become world citizens.
That's it.
Yeah. And so, because yay for one world, everything. So, you got the education has literally been injected with this kind of propaganda for globalism, for statism, where we need a centralized governing power to control our good neighbors. And this is part of the picture of modern society. But these same people that are behind that also created the NEA, for one thing I've already mentioned, but they also created the American Historical Society, and so they can do a little Orwellian rewriting of unsavory facts of history. They also funded the development of television, which is, to me, in my opinion, creating that television was the greatest coup d'etat ever. With a TV screen, which, does anybody mention to you that the flicker rate on television screens is itself a metaphysical assault on your mental states?
Oh, yeah. They've got it so it puts you in that hypnagogic beta wave state so that you automatically lower your thought process, so you're not critically thinking, you're just direct download of typically
way
BS.
To put it. That's excellent. Yeah. That is excellent, John. I totally agree with you. Total download and no critical thinking. It's mesmeric and it's hypnotic.
I mean, they put the telescreens in everybody's house.
Oh, yeah.
From the 1984, they've got the telescreen there.
Yeah, man. And
And it'll listen to you and spy on you, and now you can take it with you in the car and your phone or your tablet. And
oh, yeah, yeah. And they're saving the world here.
Yeah.
All of us free-thinking individualists who think that even if the government says no, I'm still going to smoke a joint. Oh, my goodness. So these families that created the great tax-exempt foundations and did all this have a really sordid history. And I'll give you one little example. Back in 1917, World War I was going on. And a guy named Leon Trotsky was in New York City. A guy named Vladimir Lenin was over in Germany. And Lenin and Trotsky both wanted to go to Russia and kind of steer their revolution that was going on there. So the Carnegie Foundation for International Peace gave Leon Trotsky more than $6 million. These are 1917 dollars. And the Schiff banking family, they're like a lieutenant group under the Rothschild, gave Lenin and Trotsky $20 million to go foment the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, get rid of the Tsarist system who would not accept the Rothschild banking system in Russia. So to slap them on the face for not accepting the big boss's banking system, corporate America and corporate London financed the Bolshevik Revolution with at least what we know of is more than $26 million to create, by revolution, create the world's first communist country. And, you know, this Ford Foundation's been guilty of these kind of activities. Morgan's Foundation, Carnegie, and the Ford Foundation, they get tax exemption for their powerful foundations, and they use them for political purposes based on their conception of what would be good for the market.
And just to connect dots for people, all those foundations you just mentioned are also major players in funding academia, like the Carnegies and the Fords and the National Science, all that. Heavily funded.
Exactly. Rockefeller Foundation funded Ernst Rudin throughout the 30s in Germany when Rudin was Adolf Hitler's chief eugenicist. And after World War II broke out, the Rockefeller Foundation continued to fund Ernst Rudin's eugenics in Germany, and are still doing it to this day, although Rudin is no longer doing it. But these foundations, well, like Ford Foundation, Ford Motors put the chassis under Hitler's Jeeps and trucks.
And Standard Oil gave him the gas to put it in place.
You've been reading your hidden history really well. Standard Oil New Jersey is a Rockefeller organization. Did patent sharing with IG Farben to give the synthetic fuel for Hitler's mechanisms. Remington Arms built the machine guns for Hitler's army. It goes on and on. And the source for all this information is a guy who was a dignitary at Stanford University named Anthony C. Sutton. Sutton wrote the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. Another book was Wall Street and FDR. Another book was Wall Street, well, on and on. But he also wrote a book on Skull and Bones, which he said before he died that was his favorite piece of work. Skull and Bones is another deep rabbit hole that people can go down and find out, my goodness, there's some hanky-panky going on behind the scenes on Wall Street and Madison Avenue and in Washington, D.C., and that corruption has infiltrated now the state's governments, so that right here, even in Montana, our state legislature shows signs from time to time of being influenced by federal policymakers for corporate purposes. And this is, you know, it's now even spreading down to our local county governments and municipal governments, where we find ourselves receptive, for some reason or another, we're receptive to Agenda 21, which leads us into another rabbit hole altogether. But it's coming out. And I can tell you this, John, I wrote a letter to the RNC, and I guess it was probably maybe 6 or 8 years ago. And I asked if that was true, what I had heard, that the Republican National Committee had made a plank in their upcoming resolutions, that plank being to expose Agenda 21 to the American people. And I got back on their letterhead, an RNC letterhead, a really nice lady sent me the full report on Agenda 21, what the Republican Party itself was then obligated to disseminate to the American voting public. And in that document, their resolution, they are absolutely echoing what Tom DeWeese or Michael Shaw and others are saying about, oh my goodness, the Agenda 21 wants to get rid of single-family homes and personally owned motor vehicles. They want our cars, our pickup trucks. They want us off of the land and into these stack-em-and-pack-em high-rise cities near rail lines and use public transportation and get rid of these nasty old cars. That's what that is in their writings. You can go see it. So American people still don't seem to know that, but that's because they're watching TV.
Yeah, I mean, they've been phasing in these driverless cars under the guise of safety, of course, for,
oh yeah,
you know, and that I know about 10 years, so no.
And electric cars, too, so we don't have to use that fossil fuel. And contaminate our, I mean, I'm noticing up here, I just got a foot of snow overnight here, and I've noticed this global warming is really raising hell up here where I'm living.
It sounds like it's really, really bad up there in the snow.
Well, it's, you know, we're fighting global warming the best we can in Montana. Pile up the snow and go below zero, okay? Well, we can do that really well. So, anyway, bottom line, they call TV shows programs for a reason.
That's what I was going to say, for a reason, yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm pleased, you know, we have only just recently discovered each other, but I'm very pleased with the research that you've done, where you know what I'm talking about already.
Unfortunately.
And it is unfortunate. No free American really should ever even have to carry the knowledge we have gained in our minds. We shouldn't have to know it. It shouldn't even exist. This is a miracle.
It's definitely a bit of a burden. I've told people that before. I don't really want to know all this information. I'd love to, in some ways, go blue pill and not know any of this stuff sometimes. But
Because
I look around where I live all the time, and all I see is Agenda 21. There's nothing but condos and apartments. You can touch your neighbor's house about this far apart. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's
smell what he's cooking for breakfast, you know.
I mean, not to get off on a total diatribe, but we were talking to a real estate person yesterday about just basic stuff we're looking for in a house, and she just kind of laughed because I was like, I want at least an acre to a half acre, and I want to see humans. And she thought I was nuts.
Well, you know, man, when I was in the Marines, I learned to shower with 40 other guys, go to meals with 80 other guys, whatever. And I kind of ended up getting out of the government program of war making, kind of ended up thinking, yeah, I kind of like to get my privacy back.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, is another one of the blessings that our Constitution insists that our government, our federal government, protect for us, is our right to privacy. I mean, they spell it out that we have that right. And the Constitution is supposed to protect that right. And while Roger Stone can be assaulted by, what it was, 29 operatives of the police state because he lied to somebody, allegedly, the people who were like Clapper that used to be at the NSA, these people lie to us constantly, lie to Congress. I mean, and nobody goes to jail. Nobody's arrested for lying to you and me. But they do it a lot. So, anyway, I wanted to get away from the cities of man. Once I, like I said, I went middle-aged crazy, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I better head for the hills. And so it's been an experience and an adventure, but I've learned... I've been here since 3 months before 9/11. I got to Montana in 2001. And I've been here and happily here ever since. But I can remember I've lived in neighborhoods. I've lived in apartment buildings. And that's just not for me. Maybe it's the Agent Orange working in my head. You know, it causes me to just be weird, but I just really don't care to be around that many people anymore.
Well, I mean, they've done studies after study where that shows what this does. When you compact people, they do it with animals, but it shows it makes an increase in homosexuality. It makes an increase in violence. It makes an increase in stress and, you know, what people would term as post-traumatic stress or killings. You know, all that stuff is all the petri dish you get when you shove people like little rats in a cage.
Thank you. And you know, you brought up rats in a cage. When I was in college after the war, I did try a few semesters, but I never graduated. But in one of the classes I was taking, the professor gave us that example of a scenario in which the study was to build a large cage but make it environmentally familiar for rats. And they run a little stream of water through the center of that cage, and they put food outlets in various places around the cage. And every day, they put the same amount of food out for these two rats they put in there, a mommy rat and a daddy rat, who, for lack of anything else to do, made babies.
Yeah.
And as the babies grew up and made babies, the scientists studying this didn't increase the food supply. Okay? And eventually, there were so many rats in this, what used to be an abundant cage, that they were tripping over each other and they're fighting each other for food. And they're just becoming violent and crazy. And I think he called that study a study in proxemics or something, but close proximity to crowds of people on a sustained basis is going to create or generate psychological intent to violence, like you said. So, I don't know, where did you find out about that?
I couldn't put my finger on it right now. It's been a while.
You know about it, though. So, a lot of people hadn't figured that out yet. But our world leaders know it very well. They know. And they don't care. Because if we were to chaotically kill each other, it saves them the trouble.
Exactly.
Okay? We do know Stonehenge is about. We do know what the Georgia Guidestones is about. We do know what Agenda 21 is about. We do know what the vaccine programs are about, GMO foods, chemtrail spraying particulates and aerosols containing even aluminum. Aluminum salts in aerosol that we're breathing in, even though the scientists know that the human blood-brain barrier cannot keep that aluminum out of our brains. And they do also know that that aluminum present in a brain will produce things like Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease and other diseases which are just going through the roof right now.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk about why these diseases are just going through the roof. They want to say, oh, well, we've just suddenly figured out how to determine if someone has that, like we were just stupid for a few hundred years and couldn't determine the characteristics of the disease.
Right. But, by the way, while we're discerning that somebody has it, we can now sell them a vaccine or pills, pharmaceutical stuff. That was another thing these tax-exempt families did. The AMA, they created that for us.
That's right.
And the AMA is like the protecting master holder of the key for the pharmaceuticals, Big Pharma, and for operations like Monsanto. John, I think that our civilization is in deep doo-doo, is one not so nice way of putting it, but I can think of worse ways of saying that.
These are the same people that funded the Flexner Report that basically did away with all the naturopath, homeopath, and chiropractic doctors. Well, they didn't do away with them, but they marginalized them and delegitimized them, I guess.
Now, you know, I haven't read a copy of that report, but I totally already agree with you. There was something just recently on the Internet about somebody somewhere wanting to poo-poo this whole thing about naturopathic healing. Oh, in fact, you ever see a YouTube channel called Truth Stream Media?
I've heard of it.
Okay, you want to go to YouTube and type in Truth Stream Media and look at their video they published yesterday. The pharmaceuticals have come out and literally, one of them is literally published. I mean, you can read it in hard copy. It's published their conclusion that curing disease is not a sustainable profit for Big Pharma. they have literally said that they know this and understand it. Well, if we cure the patient, we're not going to sell him any more drugs.
Yeah.
Okay? You ought to watch this video. It's absolutely, they do wonderful video work. Truth Stream Media.
I'll check that out. It sounds like that old movie Falling Down where he say you're not economically viable. It's not a profit model, so it's not economically viable for their to cure anything.
Right. Not sustainable. Exactly. Sustainability is another one of their key memes.
Oh, that's it.
They use to sneak in their controls on us, violations of our privacy. My goodness, you know, I remember it wasn't very long ago that people like Bill Gates and other globalists were bragging about, you know, we're going to make it possible for every African to have a cell phone. They can all get connected up,
right?
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the benevolence is just overwhelming. My goodness. And where was I? I think when Obama was campaigning, didn't he offer to provide free cell phones to people?
That's right, yeah.
You remember that? I'm not clear on it, but I thought I remembered a lot of poor people were getting cell phones back then.
Yeah, you had the Obama phone lady that was out there saying, I got a phone. And I can't remember. It was funny, but yeah.
Yeah, so they want to know where we're at, who we are, what we're doing, what we have done, what we're thinking about doing. Excuse me. In fact, I have a friend named DJ. She runs a website named Level 9 News.
I've heard of it. Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's an excellent researcher into high-level, deep, high-tech stuff. She likes to research government patents and see what they're up to next. She's been on the John B. Wells Show several times. She has one video where she's talking about two U.S. government patents, one of which is to use satellite technology to monitor your individual human brainwave patterns while you're walking around down here on planet Earth. The satellite, according to this patent, would be able to retrieve your brainwave activity, graph it and chart it, and then beam it back down to a quantum computing network on the planet, which has over 7 billion nodes, which means they've got a node for each one of us. And they'll take our brainwave activity and put that into our individual node. So if they see me having a fit of anger, the circumstances and source of that anger can be programmed into my node so that NASA, the NSA, can go ahead and take, NSA can go ahead and just take that information and build a case on me. My God, he's liable to just go post.
Better get him a vaccine.
We better vaccinate him. And if he doesn't have autism, we'll make sure he gets it soon. So, it's a crazy world. So, you know, I kind of think my answer is going spiritual. And for that, I use my poetic license for metaphysics. And I also use Tesla information regarding the nature and structure of the universe. Tesla has one quote that's a very favorite of mine, and I'm using that quote at my little silverseedsofliberty.com website. Tesla said, if you want to understand the universe, speak of energy, frequency, and vibration. Okay. Why does that resonate with me is I'm an old hippie. I used to juggle the different levels of consciousness at will by using psychedelics back in the late 60s and throughout the 70s and 80s. And I know that people on psychedelics, we were all talking about vibes back then. Oh, I get good vibes with that person there. Or, well, I got good vibes. Oh, man, now he's got bad vibes, man. But we were seeing what the public news was calling hallucination. But we were seeing the vibrations in an extrasensory capacity because we had opened our pineal gland, which was accelerating our other 7 ductless glands in our endocrinal system. Our body was up, and we were seeing things that normal consciousness does not see. And they were vibrations. And I've experienced that so many times, I just take it for granted that everybody knows, but everybody doesn't know. Everything is vibrations and frequencies of vibration, and it's all this one constant called energy. And David Icke is a very entertaining speaker, has done a really good job about talking about that. And he went into, you take an atom, the nucleus of an atom is orbited about by little things called electrons and protons, neutrons, what have you. But they're not touching the nucleus of the atom. They're suspended out in space in an orbital pattern around that nucleus, just like what we're seeing in the universe when we look into our solar system. We're seeing a sun with 9 or maybe 10 orbiting orbs on orbital paths around the sun, right? Just the same thing that's going on with every atom that's in your body. The atoms together in a little clump or group make a cell. The cells together in a clump or groups make flesh, bone, eyeballs, ears, hair, everything. It's all created out of atoms in conjunction with each other in groupings. But when you go back down to the reality, say the planet Earth to the sun, there is no visible connection between the Earth and the sun other than a gravitational attraction or whatever that we can't see. It's empty space out there other than that invisible attraction that keeps us at a certain distance from the sun and in an orbital path. The same thing with an electron on an atom, on its nucleus. If you took the space out of an electron's relation to the nucleus of its atom, if you remove that space and condense it to where the electron, proton, and neutron are all right there on the surface of the nucleus, it would be the same thing as if you, the same proportionate relation, as if you took the space between Venus and Saturn, Pluto, and the Earth away from the sun, so that all of our planets settled onto the surface of the sun. So that in reality, all this space is just all this nothingness. And our material bodies, well, the way David Icke put it was, and I'm just going to have to paraphrase it, but he said, in reality, the sum total of actual physical matter of everything in the universe would fit down into something about the size of a brick. Which tells me, spiritually speaking, my great escape from the parental controls of my beloved government is that the mind is operating on vibrations. It's not physical. It's vibratory vibrations. And the soul is not physical, and the spirit is not physical. And if we are living under a realm of spiritual vibratory planes of existence, inside of which is contained the energetic vibratory planes of the existence of a soul, and inside of that is contained the vibratory planes of subconscious psyche, inside of which is the conscious mind, which produces through spiritual animations, through the properties of the soul, into our subconscious, into our conscious mind, which causes us to create our own reality. Now this goes into, you know, the Buddhists were talking about this 3,000 years ago. And it's a philosophical point, and I know the busybodies over at CERN would probably have something to say about it. But ultimately, I am not my body. I am a soul with immortal gifts from the spiritual realms, which is not capable of or subject to death. The body is going to die. And I think the rule on that is no body gets out of this world alive. And there's a lot of evidence of that. But the soul does get out of here alive. And that's my thinking, my opinion. Not to reflect onto the opinions of your television show.
I like it.
But we have an escape valve called ownership of our own minds. Using those minds, vibratory planes of frequency and vibration, to elevate our awareness and our objective comprehension of the reality and the miracle of life. Elevate that in through the subconscious back into our soul, back up to spiritual reality, and no man-made government can get you there. Okay? And no science can show you how to get there. Experience an open-minded reception to the miracles of life that we see every day. You know, we see this every day. You look at a tree, you're looking at a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. You look at a bird or a butterfly or a flower, or look at a big truck going down Interstate 40. You know, I mean, everything out there is miraculous. And nature is our guide. And Thomas Jefferson knew that too. And old Elias knows that, and that's why I'm living in the woods up here talking to the animals and not talking to very many people. So I really got to thank you for giving me a chance to talk.
Yeah, I mean, that vibes thing was pinging so many things in my brain. I think you're right. So many people are so disconnected from all this. And I've thought about this too, that it seems like when most people do become connected to these things are sort of inopportune times. So, like, for example, if you go out on any freeway at 5 o'clock Friday afternoon, you can feel a palpable tension. You don't even have to be driving. You can feel the tension coming out of those areas. And, I mean, the same can be true for people that might go to a rock concert or maybe even sporting events. You can feel that hive mentality at all those things. I mean, you can feel the palpable energy. Even if you're not part of it, you can see it and feel it. And I think the government taps into a lot of that. I think most people think those only happen at those few times, but the government knows that'll happen. They can pull the frame out and see the whole city and pull that off, or the whole state and so forth. They don't have to just be at a sporting event or 5 o'clock traffic to pull it off.
That's right. And on my website, thementalmilitia.net, I've got an article about mind war, and it's this document created back in 1980 by the 7th Psychological Operations Group.
That's pretty close to me, I believe, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's in Fayetteville, right?
Yeah. So 7th PSYOP Group in the U.S. Army, 1980, wrote the article From PSYOP to Mind War. And in that article, they're talking about using the American media and television, radio, the press, to dominate the entire planet with the Pentagon's will to rule this world. Okay? And they mention, it's a 10-page document, and at the bottom of page 10, I mean, this is an Army document, okay? At the bottom of page 10, there's a footnote discussing the fact that ELF waves, ELF waves,
extreme low frequency.
Extreme low frequency waves can literally affect the physiology of the intended target person or persons, and can be used to modulate or influence, affect moods and thinking processes. And they knew this in 1980. Okay? And Lord only knows what they've learned since then.
I know.
I mean, they've got it. Since then, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Because I see those little antennas on almost every light pole in town. And I was just going on for like 5 years, and I was thinking, I wonder what the heck that is. And now they're starting to roll out. We're going to put citywide internet just in case you were somehow not getting the ELF waves. We're going to make them publicly available.
Yeah, and they've got other kinds of waves too.
I often wonder what the deal is, because I know a lot of municipalities have water towers that they'll lease out the space and let them put all these antennas on. I'm wondering, what's that doing to the water? Just pondering that.
Well, it's kind of like what a cell phone is doing when you put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, they always tell you to don't hold it to your ear. Use speakerphone because now, I mean, the science is already in. It's just the media won't tell anybody, but they know these sources of these kind of waves are not good or healthy for human life or animal life. And when especially if you're feeding the human organism genetically modified organisms, GMO foods, if you're spraying those bodies with brontium, strontium, and aluminum particulate, if you're putting fluoride in the water supply, if you're inoculating them with mercury-laden or other similar disadvantageous ingredients in vaccine shots or whatever other kind of shots, if you're doing all this and brainwashing them at the same time with their television sets, by George, the people really don't have much of a chance to escape this damage and what I call electromagnetic pollution, but that's a nice name for it. It's actually weaponized electromagnetic pollution that can be directed at individuals or at towns or at cities or the whole country. And the people that are in charge of all that have a lot more money than I do, so I don't think there's much I can do about it except, you know, try to eat as healthily as possible. Just try to get as healthy as I can, but it's not looking good for life on planet Earth right now. And Ray Kurzweil, what's he want to do? Merge us into robots?
Yeah, we're all going to be Terminator.
Yeah, the post-biological man is what he'd like to see. pretty interesting.
So to your point, they can pretty much control the vibes, or they will be pretty soon.
Oh.
By turning up the ELF here or there, or changing the cell signal.
Well, and say that, like I was saying, that thing DJ discovered, their patent for beaming reflections of your brain waves up to the satellite and back down to a quantum computing network. If they can do that, and they think they can because they built the patent, and it's a federal patent, there's no telling what they're doing to us. There's no telling what they can do to us. I know military has played pretty dirty tricks on troops. Remember when they wanted to test the atomic bombs down in the Southwest?
They had all the guys in a foxhole about a quarter mile from the blast or something.
Yeah, no protection whatsoever. Just dosed the hell out of them with radioactivity. And same thing with sailors on ships down the South Pacific where they were blowing up atolls or whatever. I won't go into Fort Detrick, Maryland, what they were doing during the Vietnam War with conscientious objectors, but they called that Operation White Coat, where they were using, they were using conscientious objectors who would agree to be drafted, providing they didn't go to combat. And the Army would say, okay, well, if you'll volunteer for Fort Detrick's biological studies program, we will put you in the war. So a lot of young guys volunteered for that, and they were running biological experiments on these church people at Fort Detrick, Maryland. That's the home of the famous...
Yeah, the Skunk Works and everything.
And also of that Ames... what was it? They common name. I can't believe I can't think of it. Oh, the anthrax.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the anthrax letters?
That suddenly appeared out of nowhere. That just happened to be weapons grade material.
And this happened to be sourced to Fort Detrick, Maryland.
Yeah.
that's, you know, pretty much that has all been exposed. The people that do these kind of tricks on us, like the whole 9/11 thing and the anthrax scare afterwards, boy, or Northwood's document. I'm sure you've gone through that one.
It outlines the planes flying into buildings as a ruse to get us into another conflict.
Oh, yeah, and blowing up things, even in American cities, in order to influence public opinion in support of whatever war we want to go to next or whatever. The Joint Chiefs of Staff drew this up, submitted it to the Secretary of Defense, or you submitted it to Kennedy, who said, no, we're not going to really do that. But there again, Kennedy was, you know, he came out of the post-Tory dynasty. Remember the Tories in George Washington's Revolution were loyalists to the British. They had business with England. They did not want a revolution. And so they would snitch off George Washington's troop movements. They would house the British soldiers or supply them. And they were just sympathetic to the Brits and opposed to our revolution. Well, their families, you know, that's who funded the development of the Ivy League college system, university system.
The Tories?
The Tories, yeah. Oh, yeah, they published a paper in a newspaper of them, I think it was Boston, shortly after the Revolution, saying that they would use the business acumen in this newly created federal government to train and educate their children and their heirs with the principles of reuniting with England. Okay? That's for you. It's a long story. It's a deep rabbit hole, but the history on that is in a book written by Anton Chaitkin. That's spelled Chaitkin, and Webster Tarpley. The book is called George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography.
I've heard of it, but
you can just Google that. It's free online at Webster Tarpley's website. You can read every chapter free online. But you find out about the Tories, and that's the backbone of the Wall Street dynasty. They went into corporate dynasty and into Washington, D.C., Wall Street, Madison Avenue, and
I have a sneaky suspicion that's connected to the Rhodes Scholar Program and the Rhodes family.
Well, it certainly is. Now, Rhodes didn't start his, what we call the Rhodes Round Table. He didn't start that until the 1890s. So, America, but what he did say was he hoped that the Rhodes Scholarship Fund and the Rhodes Trust would enable the return of that stolen property called the United States to the throne of England. In other words, you want to be a Rhodes Scholar? They'll send you to Oxford, England, where you will be indoctrinated with Fabian socialism, where you will get on the bandwagon like the CFR. I mean, these are the people that created the CFR and the Trilateral Commission. And, yes, it's all interrelated, and it's all tracked now. The corporate documents, publications, their own writings, general history, it's all there. And I do. I've spent, going on 20 years just digging that kind of stuff up. But my computer is tired because of all the work files and folders I've got stuffed in here with this kind of knowledge. And my brain is tired of it, too, which is another, you know, I don't mind being up here in the woods even if it snows on me. It's okay. I got enough on my mind already. I can deal with Mother Nature a lot easier than I can deal with reality of where our country is at right now and what the potential for freedom for my grown kids will be 20 years from now. You know? Oh, yeah.
I couldn't help but think of Bill Clinton going to Oxford for studies and then getting kicked off or out because of the rape case. But I was connecting that to all the stuff you were saying with the Rhodes Scholars and the Oxfords and the Yales and Skull and Bones and the...
Oh, yeah. You had the Lowes at Columbia University. You had the Wells at Harvard. You had these different families. I won't go into that. I don't know how much time we've got left on the show, but we could talk about some really crazy history that's now known. History is, I mean, it's all on the table.
Sure.
But the media won't tell you about it, and our televisions won't talk about it, but the Internet still is talking about these things, and it's just a bunch of deep rabbit holes. But Clinton was referred for a Rhodes Scholarship by, I think it was a Senator Fulbright in Arkansas, and by Carol Quigley, who was one of Clinton's professors at Georgetown University.
Yeah, his big mentor with Tragedy and Hope.
Let's see if you can see it right there. Can you see it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, Tragedy and Hope let all the cats out of the bag. The history is in their own writing. I mean, he's one of them. And he just flat out tells you. Now, there's another book called the Anglo-American... Let me get it. I've got Alzheimer's disease from breathing chemtrails, but it's the Anglo-American Establishment. Quigley wrote that book, too. And he goes into that meeting in 1892 with W.T. Stead and Lord Asher and Cecil Rhodes, where Rhodes literally created the Rhodes Roundtable Group, and the nucleus was going to include those three and also Lord Alfred Milner. And they were going to have a society of helpers built around their inner circle. He said in writing that they wanted this to be a secret society built on the order or organized like the Jesuits. The Jesuits was his model for how to construct this. That was 1892. By 1903 or 1904, they had taken over the editorship of the Times of London, which is where all your members of Parliament will get their daily talking news. Okay? And they have been influencing what the British people, the United Kingdom, sees or hears ever since. They came over here in 1921 and set up the CFR, which managed to attract people like Connie Chung or Barbara Walters or Walter Cronkite or Dan Rather. All of those people belong to the CFR. They all get their marching orders from the CFR.
That explains a lot.
Oh, yeah. And that is a direct descendant of the Rhodes Roundtable Group. Rhodes Roundtable sent... the British delegation to the Paris Peace Accords in 1919. That British delegation met Woodrow Wilson's American delegation from Wall Street, and they had lunch together and worked together for months over there. And the British delegation showed the American delegation why they should establish a similar operation in America to the RIIA in London, and that's the Royal Institute of International Affairs. So RIIA helps them create the CFR at the Pratt House in New York, 1921. One of the charter members was my old buddy, Alan Dulles. One day we should do a show just about Mr. Dulles. Now, because he was Rhodes Roundtable Group. So was, well, Mr. Dulles, to give you just a brief rundown, he helped Sullivan and Cromwell on Wall Street hide the money transfers from Union Banking Corporation and a lot of other corporations to Hitler's Third Reich across the 1930s to build up the Third Reich. He was one of their legal counsels that helped them arrange secret money transfers. In fact, they finally came up with the Bank for International Settlements in 1930. So massive amounts of money from London and New York could go to Germany without being traced. So after setting that all up, and then after watching through World War II, he went to President Truman's closest advisor named Clark Clifford and helped him write the National Security Act of 1947, which created the CIA and a couple of other things. By 1949, they had amended that act to where it included the creation of the NSC at the White House and the black budget. Okay. Well, that was 1947 through 49. Next thing you know, we're in the Korean War in 1950. And the next thing you know, by the late 50s, under Eisenhower, Alan Dulles became the head of the CIA, the DCI. And he was Eisenhower's DCI, Director of Central Intelligence. And one thing that they do in the CIA's charter, they work for the president in secrecy. They can do clandestine operations or black ops or whatever, and be above the, they can do it without worrying about getting in trouble, and they can do the dirty tricks. But each incoming president must be presented by the CIA with the ongoing clandestine operations that their outgoing president had started. Eisenhower had started plans to invade Cuba. He did. And Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA when Kennedy was coming in to replace Eisenhower in the White House. So Kennedy received a visit by Alan Dulles and Richard Bissell and a General Cobble, who were the top three dogs at CIA, to go over these clandestine operations, one of which was the invasion of Cuba. And Alan Dulles, in his biography about, well, not his biography, just say it's his autobiography, handwritten on what Peter Gross calls the coffee-stained breakfast table napkins, where Alan would sit there waking up in the mornings drinking coffee and write down notes. These are preserved at Princeton University. Anybody can go see them. But he has admitted in his own handwriting that he and Richard Bissell lied to Kennedy about air support for the invasion at the Bay of Pigs. They told Kennedy they had foreign aircraft salvaged that would be painted up and used for air support for that landing in Cuba. And Kennedy told them, well, just remember, I'm going to give you a new finding to carry forward with this, but this is not a U.S. government operation. This is strictly CIA matter. And there will be no U.S. military assets used in that invasion. This is not an American project. So, Alan Dulles confessed many years later that they had no intention of using Guatemalan aircraft like they told Kennedy they would, because they figured Kennedy would bow to the pressure and save that black operation from blowing up in everybody's face. At the last minute, if they called him and said, we need some jets scrambled for air support for this invasion. Now, this is Alan Dulles. Well, Kennedy fired Dulles after an investigation and the Bay of Pigs did blow up. And Kennedy fired all three of those guys for lying to him and making him look bad because he got egg in his face. He came out at first denying that we had anything to do with that invasion and got caught lying about it to the American people. So he put the blame off on them, which is where it belonged in the first place, and fired them. And now he's fired Alan Dulles, who is one of the key men to create the CIA and the head of CIA. Well, that didn't go over so well with certain people. But not long after that, George H.W. Bush, working for the CIA, was in Dallas, Texas. And John F. Kennedy had his head blown apart. And who was put on the Warren Commission to construct the investigation?
Alan Dulles.
There he was. On the commission, and that's why we still to this day do not have a federal government confession that, yes, our own government killed our own president. But they will not let us have that confession. But everybody now knows it anyway. Thanks in part to Oliver Stone. You seen that movie, JFK?
I have. It's been a while, but I've seen it.
You know, I like to watch that one about every 2 years because he lays it wide open with that movie very, very nicely. But, yeah, the cat's out of the bag. Nobody, us little people, we can talk about it all day long. But to get Washington actually admit that, yes, the same thing with Martin Luther King. You know, they had a trial in Memphis not long ago. And the conclusion of the trial was that, yes, you had army snipers there, you had military intelligence, and you had nefarious other operatives, but this was not a lone gunman thing. This was an assassination, a planned assassination, using government resources to kill Martin Luther King. And that's now on the record. In fact, the King family is trying to get that more widely known about. And of course, the media doesn't want to say much about that either.
Yeah, I heard that. Wasn't it a civil trial or something where they had to come out and admit that there was more than one person involved?
Oh, yeah. And they even admitted, in the trial, they even admitted that they had army snipers there. FBI was involved on it. I mean, probably CIA, but my memory is not clear on that. But you can go online and find that trial transcript and see the government killed Martin Luther King. After all those years of surveilling him under the J. Edgar Hoover's Houston plan, which nobody knew about back in those days, man, anybody that was opposing whatever the policy wanted to be in Washington would get a list started on him by J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
And they're still doing it in every way, in ways that Hoover's probably dancing on his gravestone and his ghost about, my God, look at what they've done to my ideas now. They have made it totally inescapable.
That's true.
Nobody can hide. Nobody can go anywhere, get away from anything. We got them. That's just, yeah. And that's what we have evolved to since he was pulling those dirty tricks back.
I mean, it's probably a whole show or two worth of information, but, I mean, I think that's what they did to the whole counterculture and everything since then. They infiltrated it with COINTELPRO. And I'm going to conflate these, but I know there was, like, Project Chaos, and I think there was Merrimack or something. There were several. But all of them sort of...
Keep talking, I'll cough a little bit, okay?
Okay, problem, man.
Thank you. Got that done.
Good. But they were all sort of doing the same thing, in my opinion. They were infiltrating these different groups, whether it was student organizations, what they termed as subversive groups, civil rights groups.
All civil rights groups, all of your anti-war groups, peace groups, the psychedelic underground, the counterculture, they were all over the place.
Yeah.
In fact, there's one of them was who set me up for getting arrested in 1971, right?
Mm-hmm.
really cute story. Sometime I really ought to tell you that story. But, yeah, they were trying to destroy any kind of opposition to the preferred federal policy. At that time it was, well, since Lady Bird Johnson is a part owner in Bell Helicopters, and they need to field test their new Huey helicopters, we're going to have our damn war in Vietnam. Whatever the people object to, it doesn't matter. We'll just shut them down. We're going to have our war in Vietnam. And if we have to kill 58,000 people of our troops to do it, so what? They're only cattle. They're expendable. And we'll give them a medal. Yay. I mean, that's the cold-hearted underbelly of a very dark beast that has infiltrated our system of government from top to bottom, all the way down to where you can see this military police paramilitary assault on Roger Stone's home the other morning.
Oh, yeah.
The murder of LaVoy Billy Pinnicum in Oregon 2 years ago. Shot in the back three times while his hands were in the air. No warrant for his arrest, pulled over by more than five squad cars who were waiting on him to go through.
Yeah, they had so many lasers on him, it looked like some sort of laser show out there.
Well, they had the FBI sniper team was there, HRT, part of Oregon State Police, all because the governor told the FBI at the Justice Department, don't wet LaVoy Finnicum's virus spread outside that county. So that roadblock where they set up around the curve in the highway there, that roadblock was at their side of the county line. Okay? They were there on the governor's orders and the FBI's orders from Washington, D.C. to make sure LaVoy Finnicum did not get to that meeting in the next town up the road where he had been invited to speak by the local sheriff. And I met a lady at Redfield Expo in Spokane this past summer who was one of the women of 400 people sitting in that audience waiting on LaVoy and the Bundy brothers to get there to speak to them with the sheriff there to welcome them. Okay? I've got her contact information and she verified for me. Oh, yeah. I was sitting right there. There were several hundred of us waiting.
I didn't know that. That's heavy.
It is. And so the man had no criminal record. There was no warrant for him. He wasn't speeding. When they pulled him over, he stopped his truck. No cop got out of a squad car and walked up to his window to write him a ticket because that was not a traffic stop. He hadn't violated a traffic law. This was a deep state type government operation to shut down the voice of dissent because LaVoy was talking about private property rights, personal ownership of your government, Second Amendment, First Amendment, Fourth Amendment, states' rights. The states which created the federal government still have their rights. Justice Scalia, who wrote the majority opinion when Sheriff Mack won that Supreme Court case in 1997 about states have the rights, they don't have to enforce federal laws that are in violation of their citizens' constitutional rights. And that's Scalia wrote it. But he said, it is incontestable that the Constitution created a system of dual sovereignty, where the states have their sovereignty into which the federal government cannot intrude. The federal government has its sovereignty in areas which the states cannot intrude. In other words, if the federal government is chartered to protect the citizens in the states' certain rights, their unalienable rights, and states can violate the rights, the federal government has the authority to make that state back off. Like you say, if all the Democrats in Oregon were to make a vote for a new referendum saying that we're going to have to kill all red-headed people. At that point, the federal government is required by its constitution to go to Oregon and say, dudes, you're over the line here. You can't go killing people because of the color of their hair. They have constitutionally protected rights. So that way, the federal government can intrude into a state. But, and there are ways that states can nullify federal crime. They can't. And that's what Justice Scalia was talking about, the system of dual sovereignty, which gives us two protections under the law. If the federal government would own up to its own responsibilities, we wouldn't be having these problems. And, you know, take these statists, the globalists, the socialists, the statists, the people that believe they want a government. Man, that's that's a really pathological mindset to find oneself in, statism.
I think that's where we're at, which is so disheartening.
It's very disheartening, and it's where, well, according to the media, there's a lot of people thinking that. I'm not too sure. All my neighbors up here in Montana, sparse as we may be, they don't need a television brainwashing them. They got to deal with day-to-day reality, what good neighbors do with good neighbors. You know, it's time to mend the fence, time to build a barn, time to get the chicken eggs, raise the cattle, farm the fields, whatever. These people know that reality, and they really aren't appreciative of a centralized, overly powerful government sitting way back east there in Washington, D.C., wanting to send their little emissaries out here to lobby our state legislators into what kind of policies Montana needs to be establishing. But we're not perfect in Montana. There's a lot. We have succumbed to a lot of this statism in the cities in Montana. The rural people, they're still good Americans. When you go to Bozeman, in fact, I'm seeing it happen in Kalispell now. Bozeman, Missoula, Billings, Great Falls, those are university towns where the left liberal, not liberal so much as progressive statism, is taking root. And, I mean, they're actually passing laws now to restrict people's freedom that we had when I moved to Montana.
Yeah, I mean, to your point on education a while back, I think that's kind of the key. They've indoctrinated so many people in these little hubs of the cult of academia, so they have their minions and they just diffuse out their bastardized history.
A real good way of putting it, man, it's a cult of academia. Yeah, I really like that, John. Totally good.
I might be unemployed soon, but I like it too.
Well, listen, I'm living proof, man. You can be unemployed and still survive. And if once you are unemployed, you're not under anybody's thumb.
I know. I kind of relish that thought, actually. I like it.
It's not bad. It appealed to me. I'm thinking, you know, when I moved to Montana, I closed a really successful jewelry store. And I was used to having money. At that time, I had a 535 IBMW, and I was playing golf with millionaires. In fact, my store had a marble marker out at the clubhouse at the local golf course, right? I moved to Montana not knowing what I was going to do. I managed to talk myself into a job for 7 years, but then I even quit that. And I've been just wild and crazy ever since, but I'm still here. Of course, I'm kind of out of money. I'm looking to go back to jewelry work so I can, you know, stock up my refrigerator a little bit. But I'm happy. I'm doing okay. And I've even now got the attention of the Veterans Administration. They're going to give me some eyeglasses.
Oh, that's great.
Yay. Uncle Sam, a little payback for what I went through in Vietnam for them, right? But I'm taking anything I get from the federal government, I'll take it. Anyway, life is tough. It's confusing. There's just an awful lot of angst out there, a lot of nervous people, a lot of freaked out people and scared people. A lot of people having fear thoughts about the economy, about stupid relations with China and Russia. These are powers that we really shouldn't be trying to offend. And they don't want to offend. I mean, Russia, Putin, makes more sense than any president in this country since JFK.
That's true.
Putin really does not want a nuclear holocaust. And he's made that clear. And yet, even Trump doesn't know how to get us out of NATO, get us out of the United Nations, and the stupid, bogus war on terror that the FBI and CIA create. Even Trump, he can't even do any of that. And the war on drugs is still right. You know, you got 700,000 Americans every year for over 20 years arrested in this country on marijuana charges. That's a million and a half every other year. In 10 years, it's a 5 million Americans every 10 years busted for pot in this country under a government that doesn't even have the authority to own their bodies. So Trump hasn't fixed that. Trump has a long list of things he hasn't been able to do anything about, and he's also got a shorter list of things, good things that he has done. And I'm not criticizing him, I'm just stating the obvious. It's going to take more than a president to fix our world today and to fix America. It's going to take more than a president. Even if he wanted to do other things I just listed, I mean, how are you going to shut down the Federal Reserve overnight? You're not. If you do, you're going to kill millions of Americans under starvation. Try that trick. It won't work. As Ron Paul said, you know, it could take 20 years to wind that one down. And I agree with Ron Paul about that. But we have serious conditions. So I talked myself all the way back around to that circle of it's time to get spiritual. It's time to get right with your maker. It's time to put your values where they ought to be as an individual who's declaring to own himself. Right? That'd be my message with these silver seeds of liberty, man. Own yourself, because it's one of my memes. Self-ownership is the opposite of slavery. You think about that. A slave is somebody that doesn't own himself. A self-owner is somebody who is not a slave. Because if somebody else owns him other than himself, then he is their property. We call that a slave. So self-ownership is the opposite of slavery. And that message should resonate all over America. If I can get some good website operators to help me promote that idea through these silver seeds of liberty, I feel like I got even with them a little bit. Maybe help my fellow man along the way. Yeah.
I like that, man. I like it. I think that's what I think that's what we all have to do at this point in the game. I was trying to think of something good to add to that. I mean, kind of take care of your own and try to help people if you can. That's kind of it.
Oh, yeah. You want to be a moral, sensitive, aware, objective individual. You want to be what I call volunteerism. It's just, you know, I've been friends with one of the founders of the volunteerist movement back in 1982. She's been in the mental militia for probably more than 15 years. And I've had correspondence with her co-founder, who lives down in South Carolina. He's not far from you. But Carl Wattner is his name, and the website is Voluntarist, spelled with a Y. But their whole premise is, well, there is an ecclesiastical reason why you want to be an honorable, self-respecting individual, and you want to use the libertarian premise about do not aggress your neighbor or his property, and then you have the right to expect him not to aggress yourself or your property. And that's voluntarism. We don't need government once America, it's like Henry David Thoreau said, when we're ready for it, by being personally responsible self-owners, we won't need a federal government. We can have a government that governs not at all. That's in Thoreau's essay on the duty of civil disobedience. And you probably had to read that in school, right?
It's been a while, but yeah.
I don't know if they're even teaching that one anymore, but Thoreau won't go away. His essay is going to be there for a long time, and it's true. So voluntarism also says, and this is Carl Wattner's quote, but if we turn our backs on the federal government and just walk away from it, it would fall of its own dead weight. And my message is, I agree with Mr. Wattner. And why don't we in the states, which created the federal government, pull all of our resources away from the federal government, quit sending our employees paycheck tax withheld money to Washington, D.C., rearrange the tax codes here in the states, so instead of paying federal income tax, we pay state income tax. And then we don't need the federal government lording it over us, telling us what it will do, what we in the states must do, what kind of Leave No Child Left Behind education system in our public school, whatever it is. The federal government certainly doesn't have any control over how the states and the people that form their states operate their lives. Things can get back to natural, normal patterns of living as good Americans without that federal interference. And they don't need our tax money anyway in Washington. It's like I saw a sign at a Tea Party rally one time. The sign said, if they can just print it when they want to, why pay in taxes?
Why am I paying this mess, yeah.
What was it, 2008? And this came out, I saw it on the senator's website. $16 trillion printed overnight by the Federal Reserve and given to the banks, the whole banking system all over the world. And the taxpayers live with the bill and paying the interest on that money that the Federal Reserve print out of thin air. And we're stuck with owing interest on 16 more. That's not our national debt. That's extra $16 trillion. My God, man, you know.
Not to mention half my check goes to those fools.
There you go, see. And what are they doing with it? They're paying the industrial part of the military-industrial complex to build things that kill other people in other countries who we don't even know, who are no threat to us, couldn't care less about us, and who would, you know, they'd buy our mechanism, machines, or whatever it is we produce here. They'd buy it and trade with us. But they don't want to kill us until we go over there and kill a bunch of them. Then they want to kill us.
That's the truth.
And Washington is hoping we won't figure that much out.
So yeah. We go spread democracy and set up a few dozen bases and
yeah, at the point
start
of
selling arms to them.
We're going to make you be free at the point of a gun.
I can't believe they're fighting us. What are they fighting us with? Well, they're fighting us with their own weapons. But how'd they get them? We shipped it to them and sold it to them.
Ask the CIA. You know,
not to mention the spying on the American people and training to spy on or fight the American people. I don't know. I got several weird stories on that, but yeah.
Yeah, there are some weird stories on that. You can look at the interface between the Department of Justice and the Pentagon in their research and development, which DARPA published in the early 1990s. And I was lucky enough to run across that and save it. DARPA announced in that document, their first annual report, they announced their merger of Pentagon and Department of Justice. But they also mentioned the term OOTW. That stands for Operations Other Than War. Because they already knew then they're going to bring in reasons for the military to be used in peacekeeping forces here in our country, which is a violation of posse comitatus. It's a total violation. But they knew they're going to, and to get them to make it acceptable to the American people, they're going to have a lot of domestic terrorism and school shooting, mass shootings.
Oh, yeah. Random bombings.
Yeah.
Bioweapon releases.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, they're kind of conspiracy that these enemies really hate us, man. And so we're going to have Fort Stewart. They have trained, more than 20,000 soldiers to be assigned to NORTHCOM in Colorado for operations other than war, assisting law enforcement in policing and keeping the peace in our communities. And they're still training them as fast as they can. You're going to see a military police state here in this country before we know it. But they have set up the mechanism, the infrastructure to do it. So, I mean, there's reasons that everybody ought to be waking up and paying attention and turning off that TV and start getting real. It's time. Past time.
You're setting me up to tell this story. I'm not sure if I want to or not, but I'll give you most of it. I don't know if I'll broadcast the whole spiel, but my day job, I taught a class several years ago it began to be on something else, but it ended up being on pretty much everything we've been talking about today in a nutshell. But everybody loved it. It was great. All students wanted more of it. Long story short, never taught it again. Couldn't get permission to teach it for anything. I think it was about 3 years ago, I got an email from a special forces guy who was out of where you were talking about before, Fayetteville, in the psych op portion of the show. Either way, he was retired or no longer there. He was a contractor, I believe, but he was at university getting another degree or some sort, and apparently it happened upon my bio that mentioned something about the class and the subject matter of that sort. So he wanted to come meet with me. So I met with him. I got to say, it was one of the most awkward, strange conversations I've ever had with somebody. But long story short, he was discussing, and I wish I had written this down. If I had better sense, I would have. But he was discussing some of these operations, like you were talking about, that weren't, as he said, weren't violating posse comitatus because they were on private property. So they could still run these training exercises involving military and volunteer civilians to...
That's like JDM 15.
That's it, yeah.
They went and got permission from landowners to do it on their property.
Yeah.
Right? Go ahead.
But that was kind of the crux of it. I really couldn't... I said it was like one of the most odd conversations ever because I never really got what he was talking to me for. You know, I had a feeling he was feeling me out as much as I was him. But long story short,
that's what he was doing.
He basically, I believe, wanted me to give him any information and help them as it pertained to the soldiers gathering intel from the civilians. I mean, they were running a whole training op where the soldiers were going to go in there and play nice with the civilian, he didn't say forces, but in essence, civilian groups, and they were going to try to gain intel from them. I even used the word intel during the conversation. He said, oh, no, no, it's not intel. And I was like, it's intel.
Oh, Humint?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's their name for it, Humint. Human intelligence. That's intel.
Exactly.
And they call it anything else.
By any other word, it's still intel, yeah.
You can get it. Bob Woodard wrote a book, and he's got all of these acronyms in there that the CIA uses, the FBI. Like Humint is one of them. And that's exactly what he was wanting to do.
Yeah.
Or what they wanted to do. But I will tell you this, John.
It was a strange encounter.
You can take these 15, there were 15 paid federal agents or provocateurs at the Mallard Wildlife Refuge, where 14 cowboys were holed up doing an Occupy demonstration about states' rights. There was more federal agents in there at that center than there were cowboys. Okay? 15 to 14.
So they had their COINTELPRO in place.
Right there from day one, and they're talking the same talk that the cowboys were talking. But it's like, you know, news crews went out there and videoed some of these cowboys out at their firing range. One of the FBI guys in their group is who built that firing range out there and encouraged them, let's go do some practice shooting, guys. And, of course, the cameras were there. So the media made a big deal out of these cowboys are getting ready for combat, you know. Look, they're out here at a firing range. But it was the FBI guy that built the firing range there and encouraged them. This is how the FBI works. All because, I mean, all these cowboys were saying that government, you have a state constitution for the state of Oregon, and you have a federal constitution. Let's get back to the constitutional law. That's what the cowboys are asking for. They're saying, we have property rights, we have water rights, these are on the books, this is the American system. Is protected by the Constitution. BLM, what are you doing tearing up our water system for our cattle? Why are you trying to drive us off this land? You know, Ammon Bundy, I went down to Whitefish, Montana back in October of 2018 and videoed him doing a presentation where he mentioned in his talk, and that's on my YouTube channel, you can see this, he mentioned that when the Bundy Ranch thing was going on in 2014, he started doing research in the Nevada state books and found that in Nevada, the BLM, Forest Service, and EPA, the three of them combined, had foreclosed more than 5,000 ranchers in Nevada and filed for deeds to their property. So you have three government agencies that now own the books, more than 5,000 ranches. And the way they got them was if they tear down your water infrastructure and fight you in court to where your legal fees don't let you rebuild those water systems for 5 years, then they can come and file on your water rights, you lose them. And they can take your property because you lost your water rights, which they tore down. They tore them down. It's like they found Bundy said when they got through tearing up the water infrastructure at Bundy Ranch, there was, what did he say, I forget, it was like 11 or 12 armed vehicles escorting the heavy equipment that went up there to destroy their water system when they drove it out. And it was maybe even more than 12. But they were armed. These guys were armed with paramilitary gear to protect the BLM in destroying their water infrastructure for watering their cattle. Okay? And the reason they did it was because if Bundy couldn't replace it in 5 years, they could take title to that land. So, he's got the records over 5,000 different times this has already happened in Nevada alone. And it's happening in other states, like the Hammonds in Oregon. Jeez, man.
Well, I said this to another guest because all this sort of resonated with me when the Hammond and the Bundy incidences were going on. Because in my brain, I feel like it was, you know, they revved all this up in the media and then they just dropped it off the scope. So nobody, it's all blip, it's gone. But I feel like it was kind of a slow fuse because when this was going on, I kept drawing parallels to the 90s stuff that was going on where they were doing the Waco, the Oklahoma City, and the Ruby Ridge, probably most specifically out of all those. You know, I feel like they were demonizing one group, which was anybody who even had an inkling of states' rights. And then to really put the icing on the cake, they started creating these events where they killed off people and maligned all these people as being horrible anti-government. And they always throw the white supremacist card or anything else they can throw, religious nut, you know, whatever word of the day makes them the most demonized. I kind of got that same vibe from all that was going on.
Yeah, and that is how they do it. And it's a known game plan now. You can anticipate it. Another good trick for the aware person, if the news is hollering about something over here, you better look over there.
Yeah.
Okay, see what they're distracting you away from. Because they play every mind trick in the book. I mean, there's nothing they don't do to affect our perception. And I can tell you this. I had only been in Montana a few years when a mutual friend arranged a truce meeting with me and a high-ranking CIA officer. We met in a saloon in Montana for several hours over drinks and a white flag because we both were friends with the same person. We didn't want to offend that friendship for either one of us. And this guy told me, again, I bet he told me 20 times, John, the key is perception is everything. And that's the basis on which CIA operates. Perception is everything. So if we can say that James Earl Ray was a lone gunman, right, and get the media to dish that out so that the public perceives that to be the reality, then we win, okay? We can assassinate people, put it off on this one or that one, but the public perception is what we count on. And this is why, you know, Americans really need to turn off those TV sets. They need to just shut them down. I quit mine back in the 80s, and it's never bothered me a minute to be without a TV. I will. You know, when I go to a saloon, sometimes they have one of the damn things on the wall.
Yeah.
And I can tolerate it while I'm having a drink. But, in fact, if I watch a commercial or two, I get freaked out again. Let's see. What they're trying to sell the public on out there, this false plastic fantasy lifestyle. Everybody's happy, and we got a car, and we're going to the ball game. Oh, my God, John.
That's it, man.
Oh, man.
That sounds good, man. Well, we'll have to reconvene some other time and click on some of these other things.
Well, I'd be happy to do that with you, but I'd like to. I just wish you well, man. Between you over there on the East Coast and me up here, we've got them surrounded.
Yeah. I'm trying to get out of my location.
Yeah. Well, Montana's a little tough in the winters, but boy, there's some pretty good living still up here. So, and a lot of people understand up here. So, come on out when you're ready.
All right. Once again, where can they find your work? What's the best way to find everything, Elias?
Well, my favorite new project is SilverSeedsOfLiberty.com. That's four words all run together. SilverSeedsOfLiberty.com. My mischievous website is called TheMentalMilitia.net. And you can go through the archives there and see all kinds of stuff, especially my radical stuff. But radical things like, let's say, John C. Calhoun's 1831 Fort Hill Address, where he makes a famous statement. He was the seventh vice president of America. And he makes this statement saying, "The error is in the assumption that the general government is party to the compact." Okay? In other words, he's saying, dudes, the states created this monster. Okay? And the states, according to Madison and Jefferson with the Kentucky and Virginia Resolution, the states have the authority to rein in that federal government when it gets out of its bounds.
That's the truth.
And that's what Calhoun was saying. The error is in the assumption that the general government is party to the compact. And, you know, when I first found that some years ago, I brought up a copy of the Constitution. And I looked at the signatures. There ain't one signature on that paper from the federal government. Not a one. But at that time, only the states had any authority to sign that document. And they had an authority given to them by their people in their states, which created their governments. Okay? Every one of those 13 colonies was a sovereign nation-state republic with its own system of law and order, its own weights and measures, its own constitution. They each had a constitution. They were sovereign nation-state republics. 13 of them come together in compact to make an agreement and create this general government, which now we call the federal government, and put strict limitations on what it could do. So Article 1, Section 8 lays it out. What they can own land in the states if it's for a postal office or a postal highway, or if it's for a military fort or whatever. There's a few listed reasons, but they can't own 90% of Nevada under management of the BLM. Or, you know, it's just wildly outside the constitutional bounds. And that's what, even in 1831, that Vice President Calhoun was saying. That's the error, is thinking that the federal government or general government is party to this compact. It doesn't have any say in that compact. We, the people, created that compact, not the federal government. And waking people up to that is what they'll find if they go look at TheMentalMilitia.net. I mean, I've got a lot of historic stuff there going through the archives. They can find it. And hopefully somebody will go buy a pair of earrings so I can get some lunch. And that's SilverSeedsOfLiberty.com. And thank you very much, John, for a great visit.
Absolutely, Elias. Thank you so much, too. Let me close up shop here, and I'll talk to you for a second, if that's all right.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning into the Anomic Age today. Make sure to check out the AnomicAge.com for all the downloads. And, of course, all of Elias's guests and show links will be there as well. Remember, you can't do everything, but you can do something, so try to do it. Until next time, be safe out there. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Anomic Age, a John Age project. For past shows, further info, and to comment, go to anomicage.com. That's A-N-O-M-I-C-A-G-E.com. Till next time, thank you for listening to The Anomic Age. I'm going to go to the next one.